This is the Quality News Network. Wildfires continue to scorch the western U.S. In South Dakota, 9 acres and 27 homes have been destroyed. One person has died. Firefighters are battling the largest wildfire in Utah's history. Thousands have been evacuated in 8 other states. Cleanup efforts today in Kansas, Texas, and Oklahoma hit by flooding last week. Hundreds were forced from their homes. At least 17 are dead. President Bush today refused requests by Congress for testimony from 2 former aides about the firings of federal prosecutors. The president invoked executive privilege in denying the testimony, and White House counsel would not explain why he did so. The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee investigating the president's decision to erase Louis Libby's prison sentence thinks Libby knew too much. Democrat Congressman John Conyers of Michigan said Libby's sentence was commuted because he might have implicated others in the administration. Conyers scheduled a committee meeting on Wednesday to discuss his findings. The director of the National Hurricane Center has a new assignment. Bill Proenza's relocation comes just 4 days after employees of the Hurricane Center called for his removal. Employees say he damaged the public's confidence in their forecasting abilities. The U.S. Army missed its monthly recruiting goal for the 2nd month in a row. Pentagon officials say the Army fell short by about 1,000 new recruits for June. The Washington Post reports the failure to fill about 25% of the top positions at Homeland Security may endanger America's ability to respond to a future crisis. That's the conclusion of a congressional report to be released today. Iraq's foreign minister warned today that a quick American exit would lead to civil war and the collapse of the government. The U.S. Senate resumes debate over the Iraq war funding. Iraqi civilians are being urged to fight back following a weekend in which as many as 250 died in sectarian violence. This morning in and around Baghdad, 12 people were killed, 35 wounded. Also this weekend, 2 U.S. soldiers were killed and another 3 wounded. A British soldier also died Saturday. And Pakistan's president today agreed to give clerics more time to negotiate the end to a standoff between government forces and insurgents holed up in a mosque. Science and business, next.
Fuelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking. I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but of course the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week. Yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out. I'm putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
A study of heart attack patients shows that the obese have a better chance of surviving a heart attack. Experts warn the results of the study should not be used as an excuse for the overweight to indulge. Scientists say the results are puzzling, and they plan to do more research. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, antidepressants are the most commonly prescribed drugs in the U.S. A study in 2005 indicates that antidepressants are prescribed more than drugs for high blood pressure, high cholesterol, asthma, and headaches. Clean Tech America of San Francisco plans to build the world's largest solar power farm near Fresno. The 80-megawatt farm will cover 640 acres and should be completed by 2011. The solar farm will generate enough power for an estimated 21,000 homes. Google will pay $625 million in cash to buy Postini. Postini is a specialist in communications security. According to the CEO of Google, the acquisition of Postini will streamline information security mandates. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 38 points at 13,649, the NASDAQ was up 4 points, and the S&P 500 was up 1 point. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
Okay! Don't you! Stop!
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is Monday, and I am informed it is the dog days of summer. I understand there are some practical astrological or astronomical implications of that, the dog days being measured by the rising and setting or something of the dog star Sirius, and its history, its origins in history seem to go back to the ancient Romans and what they called the canicularis dies, the days of the dogs. But I'm also informed that one dare not get a hangnail or a splinter or anything like that, or and snakes go blind during dog days, I'm told. The rabies is rampant, blood on the moon, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you know, that's where we are, and it certainly feels like it. It's mighty hot outside, and mighty hot inside too, I might add. Broadcasting live as we are from the Head On Radio Network saunas. I kid about that, but we, you know, there's just some stuff we can't run during the show, and it gets warm in here. Oh, but we love it because I'm sweating, you know, sweating off a bunch of pounds. So, you know, I hope you're comfortable where you are. You can turn on the air conditioner, just not a lot. I mean, I got my lesson from watching the Live Earth concerts this weekend, this past Saturday. And you know what? They were a lot of fun. I, for one, am not one for big one for giving free plugs. I saw on Bart Kopp's page that he was bemoaning the fact that NBC apparently chopped the daylights out of the concert to fit more commercials in. Really? You think? I didn't watch any. I really have gotten to the point where television is almost meaningless for me. I get about just about all my content through the computer now. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I watched the concerts on the computer box as well. Just plugged into MSNBC and let it roll. I saw when you could tell when the traffic was going up because all of a sudden loading, 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 and then your video would come back. For me, I know there's been a lot of talk about John Bon Jovi and Keith Urban and a lot of the stuff that went on in New York. But the high point of the concert for me, and I don't know if it is the same for you, was the Foo Fighters and Dave Grohl. Because, among other things, he called out Al Gore. He called him out and more or less told him that it was time to that it was time for Al to step up. That if we were all going to step up to save the planet, that it's time that Al Gore step up to save a once great nation. He didn't say that, but it was apparent. Dedicated a song to Al, called out Al's name during the previous song, really made it stick. And of course, I'm sure that that is not the high point of the reportage, at least not as I've seen it. No, it's about John Bon Jovi calling Dead or Alive the national anthem. I'm sure the right wing's having a field day with that. He did a wonderful job. And Spinal Tap, did you see Spinal Tap? Just delightful. Delightful. I looked at Agnes as we were waiting for them to come on, and I said, he's got to come on and say, hello, Cleveland. He's got to. And he did. As it turned out, he spoke, you know, they were playing at Wembley Stadium in London, and he came to the microphone and said, hello, Wimbledon. was perfect. Just perfect. The dancing dwarves with the Stonehenge, the two pieces of Stonehenge, the two posts, they didn't fly the lintel in until after the dwarves were gone. David St. Hubbins turned around with this disgusted look. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. But for the most part, one last thing, and then we'll just move on. Because, you know, hearing me talk about television is like watching paint dry. The police. They were the final act of the final show. And I sat here, waiting. Because I was a police fan back in the day. I thought they had as much potential to be the Beatles as any band before or since. Outside of the Beatles. Which is my benchmark for great bandness in the sort of platonic ideal kind of way. And I had a brain cell brought back to life. I had put a memory on a brain cell that I thought I had subsequently killed. And then I watched Sting, Gordon Sumner, Sting, stand there and scream, "EO!" into the microphone so many times, so long, and so loudly that an entire memory cluster was brought back to life in my brains. Back in the year 1987 BA, that's before Agnes. Pre-you, darling, pre-you. I can't be responsible. I attended a Sting concert in Atlanta, Georgia, with a lovely young lady, and the entire Sting concert consisted, for the most part, of Sting standing and saying, "EO!" I mean, he EO'd every song. Whether it was one from Dream of the Blue Turtles or some police standard, it all got EO'd. And then he would go off for an extended solo of some sort, so that every song was 15 minutes long. You know, I think he played 7 songs in the concert. Boy, am I giving myself up as a Philistine or what? But at the after about 2 songs worth of extended soloing and EOing, the young lady with whom I attended the concert turns to me and screaming over the noise of the monitors says, "Wow, Bob, he rocks! Yeah, baby, he rocks!" And so we got out of the concert and met friends for afters at some little, over some little place over in Virginia Highlands that was terribly chic. And I said, "So how was Sting?" And we both at the same moment went, "Wow, he rocks. He jammed, man." All very, of course, late 80s, loaded with irony, you understand. But honest to God, I thought for that finale, Sting, he said EO so much, I thought he was going to break into a rendition of Old MacDonald Had a Farm. But it was for the right reasons, and there was a lot of good information for young people there. Because we don't pay when you're young, and I've been young, back when I was riding my dinosaur to school every morning. And it's easy to not pay attention, but I hope there were a lot of people paying attention there, because there were lots of good PSAs and fun celebrity PSAs, and Chris Rock with his little improperly inflate your tires thing, and the Pierce Brosnan fishing for plastic bottles in the Thames or something. So I hope it had its intended effect. I also hope it had its intended effect on Al Gore. I want Al Gore in this race. My guy is Dennis Kucinich, because Dennis Kucinich is speaking to all the issues. And as it was the case in the 2004 election, Dennis Kucinich moved issues into the forefront. And he is continuing to do so. Dennis is beginning to highlight some of the issues with these so-called hedge funds and hedge fund management and hedge fund operation and putting things into the national consciousness. But as that PSA that we run also says, Al, you won once, buddy. You can win again. So I hope that this Live Earth concert whetted Al's appetite for being at the forefront and being a leader. Because, frankly, he's got it, whatever it is, doesn't he? He really does, far more so than anybody, any of the so-called mainstream candidates, with the possible exception of John Edwards. I got to admit, I'm rather disenchanted with Barack Obama, and Senator Clinton, Bueller, you know, doesn't do it for me. For policy reasons, mind you, not gender, not geography, policy. Just as you may have noticed the editorial in the New York Times yesterday. I mean, I thought I was the guy who was a day late and a dollar short. The New York Times has decided it's time to get out of Iraq now that, did you read the whole editorial? I read the whole editorial. The New York Times says, this is a disaster. George Bush screwed up the war. On and on and on. Well, let's see if we can pull up a little bit of context. Here we go. It is time, and any time the New York Times says something, you know, it's said with stentorian tones and sort of very, very authoritative and authoritarian and heavy with significance. It is time for the United States to leave Iraq without any more delay than the Pentagon needs to organize an orderly exit. Like many Americans, we have put off that conclusion. There's the New York Times writing in the third person, in the first person plural. We are not the, we are the queen of newspapers. Off with their heads. Like many Americans, we have put off that conclusion, waiting for a sign that President Bush was seriously trying to dig the United States out of the disaster he created by invading Iraq without sufficient cause, in the face of global opposition, and without a plan to stabilize the country afterward. Hey, New York Times, eat me. I mean, have I just slipped in out of an alternate universe? Because a few years ago, I was living in this universe. No, not the one where Spock has the goatee. But I was living in this universe where the New York Times every day published a ginned-up, dummied-up, faked-up, frauded-up, phonied-up article by this creature named Judy Miller, who basically sat on Donald Rumsfeld's lap and took dictation for all the stupid lies that he was telling about why we needed to go and kill nearly a million Iraqi civilians. And these articles appeared on the front pages of the New York Times with big, bold, scary headlines about how we can't wait for mushroom clouds and mobile weapons laboratories. You have to say that when you're doing it for the New York Times. You have to say laboratory. Can't say laboratory. Ain't no hillbilly rag, New York Times. But that was that New York Times, right? The same successor in time-space continuity as the New York Times that had the gall to say, we've put off the conclusion, waiting for a sign that President Bush was trying to dig the United States out of the disaster he created. Out of deference to the mackerel, I don't think I would wrap fish guts in the New York Times anymore. I mean, yeah, there are some decent people there. Bob Herbert, Paul Krugman, Bueller. No, that's it. Bob Herbert and Paul Krugman. God, it's kind of like it's sort of like ancient Yahweh trying to find a reason not to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Come on, three good men. Sorry, God, I've only got two good people at the New York Times: Paul Krugman and Bob Herbert, and that's it. That's it. That's it. All right, I will not destroy the New York Times for the sake of two good columnists. No, that's okay. We'll get them out. We'll get them a vacation to the Bahamas. While we're gone, you toast them, God, because they're worthless. I mean, I agree for the most part with everything that the New York Times has written here. It's what they haven't written that galls me. This thing shouldn't start with a paragraph that says, like many Americans, we've put off that conclusion that it's time for the United States to leave Iraq, waiting for a sign. No, no, no. The first paragraph after, it's time for the United States to leave Iraq without any more delay than the Pentagon needs to organize an orderly exit. The next paragraph is, of course, we are materially culpable here at the New York Times in starting the war in the first place. And we realize that our reputation is caca for being such a tool of the Bush administration. But we realize now that there's an election on the way, that it's time to start giving Republican members of the Senate and House cover under which they can hopefully retain their stinking, rotten seats. And thus, it is time to get out of Iraq. Because, you get one, two, three, and then paragraph four begins, the political leaders Washington has backed are incapable of putting national interests ahead of sectarians. God damn it, they're talking about Iraq's political leaders. So that's one, two, three, four, five paragraphs, and nobody's responsible for the war but George Bush. George Bush started the war. Right. But he didn't do it by himself. Not by any stretch of the imagination did George Bush start this war by himself. Go and read one of those PNAC letters and see how many names are signatory to it. There's a lot of them. A lot. And that's the thing. The New York Times is culpable. The Washington Post is culpable in this. But no, you're not going to get a whole lot of self-examination out of the New York Times. And as noted, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It only in the sixth paragraph, as a reason for exiting this nightmare, do we finally see the words, continuing to sacrifice the lives and limbs of American soldiers is wrong. Hey, New York Times, honey, you buried the lead. The war is sapping the strength of the nation's alliances and its military forces. It is a dangerous diversion from the life and death struggle against terrorists. Oh, stop it! It has been repeatedly proven the world over that law enforcement is the means by which one prevents terrorism. Right? Yeah. It is also the means by which one catches terrorists and prevents further terrorism. Oh, but not old hit the needle with the sledgehammer George Bush and the New York Times. Oh, we must have war in Iraq before there are mushroom clouds over Poughkeepsie. Not them. Yeah, they really do lack a significant ability to comprehend nuance. I remember that Ron Suskind article in the New York Times from several years back where nuance was basically poo-pooed by the Bush administration. We make our own reality. Nuance is everything. That's why that saying has stuck around so long as to become trite to say that the devil is in the details. The devil certainly was in the details on Iraq, wasn't it? Weren't they? Grammar moment. Wasn't. Devil was. Okay, details. Okay, yeah, devil modifies details. But seriously, all grammar aside, when the New York Times comes out and says it's time to go home, that's supposed to be some sort of a benchmark standard. Well, we can all leave now, you know, Walter Cronkite, because it's what they're trying to have here is their Walter Cronkite moment on Vietnam. The Washington, the New York Times, see, they're interchangeable in this instance. The New York Times is trying to rehabilitate its lousy, stinking reputation now. Because they helped start this war. As much or more than any other entity, they were an accomplice before the fact to the beginning of the Iraq War. And could not have been more so had they actually been in the pay of the Bush administration, which, as far as we know, they may very well have been. You know, and we get these smarmy lectures. A majority of Americans reached these conclusions months ago ahead of the New York Times. Oh, sorry, I added that part. Ahead of the New York Times, that is. Even in politically polarized Washington, positions on the war no longer divide entirely on party lines. When Congress returns this week, extricating American troops from the war should be at the top of its agenda. Suddenly, Pete Domenici and Richard Lugar are the... No. That conversation, I guess the conversation in Congress, must be candid and focused. Well, thank you for instructing us, New York Times. Americans must be clear that Iraq and the region around it could be even bloodier and more chaotic after Americans leave. Oh, Christ, I hate this. There could be reprisals against those who worked with American forces, further ethnic cleansing, even genocide. Gee, I wonder who'll commit that. Let's see. Theoretically, the Iranians will support the Shias, and I got this thing in the back of my mind. Who's going to support the Sunnis? Oh yeah, the Saudis. But see, we're not talking about going to war against the Saudi Arabians like we're talking about going to war against the Iranians, because the Saudis are the despots who are, you know, they might, what's that old, was it Harry Truman? They might be bastards, but they're our bastards. Of course, who owns whom is an open question, as between the Bush administration and the Saudi Arabian royal family, the House of Ibn Saud. Oh, this thing goes on. I'm sure you read it. The business about the human crisis, the neighbors. You know, they sit there and compartmentalize these things because they know we're far too simple to actually just read a two-page editorial. And then this is the end of it. President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney have used demagoguery and fear to quell America's demands for an end to this war. They say withdrawing will create bloodshed and chaos and encourage terrorists. Actually, all that has already happened, the result of this unnecessary invasion and the incompetent management of this war. As the Republican Party liked to... remind us during the torment of Bill Clinton, words mean things. The result of this unnecessary invasion and the incompetent management of this war. There, did you hear it? That's the New York Times quietly whispering to its right-wing enablers and the conservatives whom it serves, that it's not that the war was wrong in the first place. It's that the war was mismanaged. Mismanaged. It wasn't done right. In other words, some giant pulsating brain at the New York Times actually thinks that there is some set of circumstances under which we could have unilaterally invaded Iraq, destroyed its government, destroyed its entire civilian infrastructure, dismantled its police and military forces, and slaughtered 1 million of its civilians, and come out on top. Really. That's what that's code for. That's what that means when you see a phrase like the Bush administration has mismanaged the war. They haven't mismanaged squat. How much was Dick Cheney's Halliburton portfolio worth going into Iraq and coming out of it? How much is Halliburton's stock worth going in and coming out? How about Bechtel? How about the companies that have been created out of almost whole cloth? How about Blackwater? How about, remember Custer Battles? Oh, yeah. That money never got paid back, did it? And it won't. How about Crossing... one of those smarmy, dumbass, meaningless word combinations that wound up being... another security company mismanaged the war. My left hind foot, my Aunt Matilda's lumbago, they mismanaged this war. They managed it exactly like they wanted to maximize profit, maximize involvement, and minimize their own personal risk. This is a bug-sprayed-up editorial, because the only way this editorial from the New York Times could have possibly had any intellectual rigor to it was if it had been attached to an editorial that called at the same time for the removal from office and punishment of the dirty bastards who started it, the war. It. Right? But then again, they might have had to append another little paragraph about how they were stenographers for the Bush administration and helped start the whole nightmare in the first place. And for that, I say to the New York Times editorial staff, just go to hell, will you? This is the Head On Radio Network. This is your voice, your liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. Wow, that Sting, he jams.
You, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs named their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to. Stand by your man.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Friday on Foxed Up with John Fox at 10 a.m. Eastern, where we'll take a closer look at Jeff Beckley. We'll hear from Jeff, in his own words, his thoughts on artistic creativity, his jazz influence, and on spirituality.
I'm not so sure that some guy in the sky with a beard baked you in an oven and put his finger in your belly button and that's how you came about.
We'll even hear that Nina Simone track that John Fox mentioned.
Lilac one.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Yoo-hoo.
Hello.
Hey, Al.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Gore.
Hello.
Hey, Al. This is the Vice President.
Mr. Gore, we need you for president.
We deserve a president we can respect.
We deserve a president we can respect. Who has experience.
And compassion.
Who is the most qualified.
Who is a proven leader.
Al Gore. Right on Iraq. Right on global warming. Right for the 21st century.
Join us at DraftGore.com and supporting Al Gore for the Democratic nomination for president.
Sign the petition at DraftGore.com.
Paid for by the committee to draft Gore. He won once. He can win again.
Every drop of rain that falls in Sahara Desert says it all. It's a miracle. All God's creations, great and small, the Golden Gate and the Transvaal, that's a miracle.
Wow, the upcoming Thursday night special over at Billy Shears Music, as guest blogged by our Queen of the Chat Room moderators, ELO, a proud member of the Suit Crew. About 20 minutes before the hour, and we roll on. I want to move over to some more media oriented stuff. By the way, before we do, did you catch Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s remarks at Live Earth? He brought out the hammer and tongs, and he hammered away. I was proud of him. If you just go to the Google and type in Robert F. Kennedy Jr. live Earth remarks, at least the way it Googled up for me, the first hit was from the Democratic Daily and its video of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And his remarks from Saturday, and they were potent, and they were strong, and they were honest. He called the oil companies traitors. He used the word, and I kind of sat up when I heard it, and I went, "Yeah," because it's what they are. In fact, maybe a little bit later, we'll run some of those remarks because I think you might enjoy them. For now, though, we're going to run over to Right Wing World, and I want to start with our buddy Neil Bortz. Our buddy, you know, I say that facetiously. We'll start with Neil Bortz, and we're going back because I don't think that we should let go of the Scooter Libby commutation. I think they commuted the sentence just so people who talked about it would have to say commutation instead of pardon. Screw it. It's the Scooter pardon. Okay? The only way it's a commutation is in name only. And the reason it's not a pardon is because Scooter could not resist a congressional subpoena had he been pardoned. With the commutation, he still can. And, of course, we found out today, insofar as the Bush administration was interested in, or the Congress was interested in getting some low-level Bush administration testimony, well, that got kiboshed by the Bushies, the loyal Bushies today. They wanted who? Taylor and Harriet, best president ever, Myers, to come and testify. And George Bush gave them the order to shut the up and not attend to an official legal subpoena as served by the Congress of the United States. Associated Press reportage on the matter from today. President Bush directed former aides to defy congressional subpoenas on Monday, claiming executive privilege and prodding lawmakers closer to their first contempt citations against administration officials since Ronald Reagan was president. It's the second time in as many weeks that Bush has cited executive privilege. Of course, this isn't Bush citing it. This is Fred Fielding, Watergate man, citing it. Oh, and by the way, did you notice the old dude, Tennessee, has the young, Fred Thompson, yeah, has a wife that could be his granddaughter, great-granddaughter. Did you notice that the Nixon remarks came out over the weekend? Richard M. Nixon referred to Fred Thompson as, and I quote, "He's dumb as hell," unquote. That kid, they're going to put that kid on the as counsel for the committee. He's dumb as hell. But he's a friendly one. Yeah, he was friendly, all right. He leaked internal Watergate information to the White House. Oh, Fred Thompson, you sleazy punk. You sleazy pedophilic punk. Dumb as hell. Man, that's the bumper sticker. You know, we're all the time complaining as liberals and progressives that we can't reduce our convoluted, complicated, intellectualized politics to a bumper sticker like Right to Life or God said it, I believe it, that settles it. We just got one handed to us. Who's going to go out and print them up? Fred Thompson, dumb as hell, Richard Nixon. That ought to be enough. But anyway, White House counsel Fred Fielding insisted, well, if he's insisting, then we'll just have to do what he says, that Bush was acting in good faith in withholding documents and directing Harriet Myers and Sarah Taylor to defy subpoenas. Oh, for heaven's sakes. It's enough to make you really want to scream, isn't it? But this is a criminal administration. And like I said, we're going to wander over to right-wing radio world because you really want to hear this Neil Bortz thing. And it's a couple of it's a few days old. Admitted. But we need to start here because I'm going to show you how this extends into the blog or into the media atmosphere. And we will start with Neil Bortz. This goes back to his July 5th Thursday broadcast. And on Thursday, July the 5th, Neil Bortz hauled out, like the dutiful little soldier of the Reich he is, the designated talking point. Again, this goes back to the 5th, last Thursday. But we're going to bring it forward a little bit, and you're going to see the right-wing spin machine in action. Let's start here, Agnes.
But in the case of Scooter Libby and Bill Clinton got sentenced and convicted for exactly the same crime.
Time out.
You cannot tell me.
So you know the starting point, right? This goon, this lying son of a, this lying bastard, self-made, just tried to tell America that Bill Clinton was convicted, sentenced, and tried, convicted, and sentenced. There we go. That's how it works. See, we've been so long in Dickmerica that I can't even remember the proper order of things anymore. He was tried, convicted, and sentenced of perjury. You just heard him say that. Let's just start at the beginning again there, Agnes.
But in the case of Scooter Libby and Bill Clinton got sentenced and convicted for exactly the same crime.
Keep going.
Can you cannot tell me why is there so much outrage on the left that Scooter Libby isn't going to have to serve a 30-month jail term and not a bit of outrage on the left that Bill Clinton didn't even get a 30-month jail term?
I don't remember Bill Clinton actually being convicted for perjury.
I'm sorry, he was.
He was exonerated by a Republican.
No, sir, an impeachment. We're talking about a criminal trial, sir. The verdict was guilty. He was
disbarred. There was no criminal trial of Bill Clinton. Ever. There was no criminal trial whatsoever. Not one. Now, there was a lawsuit from that Arkansas woman who got the nose job, Paula Jones. But there was never a criminal trial. There wasn't a criminal charge. Neil Bortz is just a liar. Just like Rush Limbaugh, he's a liar. Just like Glenn Beck, he's a liar. Just like the Savage Wiener. He's a liar. If you were listening to our good friend Peter Godbold this past Friday evening, in Strictly Confidential, you heard the Savage Wiener making up lies about a homosexual mafia. Now, you know, the real Italian mafia goes around in, like, black limos and black Lincoln Continentals and stuff like that. I don't know what the homosexual mafia drives. But I'm sure it's a far more fabulous automobile. Peter, we'll ask Peter. He controls the gay agenda anyway. I'm sure he's in charge of selecting automobiles as well. But seriously, we're going to continue here. But do you see where can you go when your opening premise is a bald-faced lie? Why are they upset about Scooter Libby, but they weren't upset about Bill Clinton not doing any time? Bill Clinton wasn't convicted of anything, Bortz, you doofus. Okay, continue, please, Agnes.
Hard as a result of that verdict. He had his privileges to practice law before the Supreme Court of the United States revoked because of that verdict.
There was no verdict.
But, you know, it's a crime that Scooter Libby isn't going to jail, but quite okay that Bill Clinton didn't. Okay, but I have a couple of stories for you. First of all, on the Scooter Libby sentence commutation, Scooter Libby was sentenced to pay a $250,000 fine. That's $250,000. That's more than a lot of people make in a year. He was also sentenced to serve 30 months in jail and then 2 years on probation. He was not pardoned by George Bush. He had the jail sentence commuted. Scooter Libby was convicted of the exact same thing that Bill Clinton was convicted of.
Wait. Scooter Libby was convicted in a criminal trial of perjury, of lying to a grand jury, of giving false information to the FBI, none of which Bill Clinton was ever criminally charged with at all, even a little bit, not even a smidgen. But this is right-wing radio. Now, go ahead.
Bill Clinton got no jail time. That was fine. Scooter Libby now gets no jail time. That's not fine. Bill Clinton, liberal. Scooter Libby, presumed right-wing. At any rate, Bill Clinton has now taken it upon himself to criticize George Bush for, in Bill Clinton's words, pardoning Scooter Libby, although it was only a commutation of sentence.
Okay. Got it all figured out now? This is the talking point. Bill Clinton. But see, you have to start out with a lie. Bill Clinton was not charged with a crime. Bill Clinton was impeached and tried in the Senate. Okay? Now, bear in mind that when the people who pull dear leader's strings were explaining it to him, they said to him, "Mr. President, it's just like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton didn't have to go to jail, therefore the jury verdict is the sentence imposed is excessive." Because, you see, George Bush doesn't come out and stand in front of a microphone and use a word like excessive of his own free will. George Bush is the kind of... I thought that the sentence was... The sentence was too sentencey. There was too much sentence in the sentence. Excessive is a creature that, and they made it clear to George Bush that it was excessive by explaining that rotten Clinton didn't get any jail time, so neither should Scooter. And of course, that played really well with George because he's jealous of the fact that George Sr. likes Bill Clinton better than he does his own son. Because again, there's more of that whole Oedipal thing going on there. If you went back to the last Goldmember, the last Austin Powers movie, and the scene where Mike Myers as Austin Powers sings "Daddy Wasn't There," you take the Mike Myers face out in Photoshop and you put in George Bush's face, and you've pretty much got the entire psychopathology of George Bush's existence. Daddy wasn't there. He wasn't there. But he always has been. He just wasn't much good at the love thing. The love thingy. He didn't get the love thingy, right? So, please understand that that is the starting point. We're going to continue onward. We've got more audio to let you see how this develops. In the desperate attempt to get the American people to not pay attention to Scooter Libby, to not pay attention to the fact that, you know, this is just filthy, dirty, rotten, scandalous, scoundrelicious garbage. And instead to think about Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton. You will think only of Bill Clinton. We'll go to the phones now. Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Got a better bumper sticker for you. And it's even shorter.
Okay.
Fred Thompson, the snitch.
That too, yeah. Maybe one on each side. Fred Thompson, dumb as hell. Fred Thompson, snitch.
Yeah. That's all you need in the White House is a snitch. You know, that type of personality.
Well, I remember a long time ago reading, I guess it was one of the Woodward and Bernstein books about Watergate, and there was mention of what a sanctimonious suck-up Fred Thompson was. Mm-hmm. And how you couldn't trust him with a handful of wet poop. Because,
well, let's face it, you can't trust any of them.
No.
That's why I'm praying, you know. I'm sacrificing chocolate bunnies. I'm doing everything but conducting human sacrifice out here, you know, to get Gore to run.
Yeah, did you see any of Live Earth?
I was watching it all over the world. I watched Cat Stevens, you know, otherwise known as Yusuf these days.
Yeah.
Perform in Hamburg. It looked to me like of all the concerts, the people in Hamburg, even though I couldn't understand the word they were saying, they were having the most fun. I have to tell you, the New York, my best act, my favorite act of the New York concert.
Uh-huh.
Roger Waters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, they flew out the pig. And that was just wonderful.
Well, yeah, not to mention, you know, another brick of the wall. How could you miss?
Yeah.
No, complete was, you know, he had to go raid the nearest school and get some more school kids, and off he went.
Well, you know, in a way, that brings up an interesting, or not, I don't know if it's interesting, you guys can make that decision, but somehow or another, I felt like it would have been more fun if we could have gotten more from the acts. If we could have gotten more from the acts. I mean, I would have liked to have heard more than four songs from Roger Waters.
Oh, yeah.
By the same token, two-thirds of the way through all the E-I-E-I-O's from Sting, I was convinced I could have done with one from the Police. But that's just me.
You know what? I was hoping that Sting would have had the guts to do.
What's that?
Fragile.
Oh, yeah. But I was scared to death they were going to do Every Breath You Take.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were several. So Fragile would have been good.
Do you know the story behind Fragile?
Maybe. I'm not sure. Go ahead.
Okay. He was slated to perform a concert in Wembley Stadium. September 11, 2001. The stadium was filling up. There was no way to cancel it. Word comes, bam. Planes are going into the Twin Towers. So they let it fill up.
You sure that was Wembley? I thought that was Turin, Italy.
Well, no, it was England. And he comes out and he informs them what's going on. And he says, for obvious reasons, nobody really feels much like singing. But I'm going to do one song, and then you're going to get your money refunded. And we'll redo this concert later. and the song he did was Fragile. And it broke everybody's heart. The lyrics of that song just killed everybody.
I've always loved that song.
Yeah, but when you put it in the context of especially 9/11 and especially now with the war, with the health care crisis, it becomes, oh, Lord, it freaks me out every time I hear it. He doesn't need to stand there and make those idiot noises. All he has to do is sing.
Absolutely. Frankly, I was surprised he didn't pontificate a little bit even.
Yeah.
Although Madonna did call the London audience a bunch of mother effers, didn't she?
I make it a point not to watch Madonna. I got up and went and did something. I got a problem with Madonna. I'm sorry, she's not one of my favorite people. I have to say one thing, though. I don't know if they were on the list, but as much as I saw of the Australian performance, I did not see Yasuo the Indy. And I'm really, really surprised about that.
Well, I caught some of those. I caught Jack Johnson, and I caught Crowded House. Of course, you know, as we learn very well here, Susan, dealing with the time differential between here and Sydney, it was a little hard to put together in my mind as to, you know, what was going on live and what I was seeing, you know, basically on a replay. But I caught bits and pieces. No, I never saw that either.
Yeah, and you know what really surprised me is because Yasuo the Indy is a band that incorporates Aboriginal music in it.
Yeah,
you know that song Treaty is just, and they didn't use that band for the concert in Australia. I really hope it was because they were someplace else and couldn't get out of it. I really do.
I do, too. And I don't understand some other artists, and Bart Kopp pointed this out on his page today, saying, I guess, Roger Daltrey said, it's just another concert.
Boy, I bet you he's eating those words.
Yeah. Oh, I'm getting told now. I'm hearing it in through the email. You've got all the facts right. The concert was not in Turin like I thought either. It was in Tuscany.
Tuscany, okay.
In Italy, yeah. I remember because I'd seen some of the footage of it somewhere along the way. But
yeah,
I have
the live recording off of that where he did that one song. And then just, that was it.
Yeah. And what else could you do? Because that concert, I recall now, was also done in conjunction with the Jordanian-born Palestinian singer who does the yodeling on Desert Rose.
Yeah.
And that was another part of Sting's consideration, that it might bring some sort of backlash against him.
And I just love that Desert Rose song.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. He's an incredible musician. Why does he need to just do that?
Why does he need to do the old McDonald every... I don't know.
I don't know either, but apparently... another one that I was really pleased to see, in fact, I go, Genesis.
I didn't see them.
Yeah.
Where were they?
London.
Okay, well, that I bet that was while I was taking the kids out, because we did take a break, and I must have, yeah. But I caught who I wanted to see. I saw the Foo Fighters. I saw the Chili Peppers. Yes, I kind of wanted to see what John Bon Jovi would do.
Oh, I saw the Chili Peppers, too. I'm going to have to get on.
I was bummed out that Flea didn't come out for every bass player known to the in the known universe with Spinal Tap.
Well, can't have everything.
Can't.
You know what? It would have been really, really cool.
What's that?
I realize there were really good reasons for it not to happen, but it would have been really, really cool if for that one performance only, Midnight Oil had gotten together again.
No, that would have been great. And you know, I was emailing back and forth with some folks, and at one point I asked, you know, hey, where are the truckers?
Yeah.
But then again, you know, there's putting together one of these things is an absolute monumental effort, and we already know that they. I don't know. Who knows who would have played at the DC show? You know, you put the post up there at the network website, Susan. Who knows who would have played DC before that creepy freak Inhofe put the kibosh on it?
Well, they had a DC concert.
Yeah, they did, but it wasn't what it was. It wasn't what it was meant to be.
No.
And it was done sort of haphazardly.
They did what they could.
Right. That's what I mean. So God only knows who would have played DC.
It would have been really nice if they'd have been able to put another one on the West Coast, but I understand why they didn't. You know, where did we get off asking for two of them?
Right. Yeah, I know. Hey, Susan, good talking to you, dear.
Good talking to you, and guess what? We're slated for triple digits this week. Woohoo!
There? Oregon's getting triple ew. Yeah, that rises to the level of unbearable. That's like that'd be like if it hit triple digits in the Bay Area or something.
Tell me about
it. Stay in and crank up the air conditioner.
You bet.
I'm sorry, there are some circumstances under which we enjoy the technology, and that's one of them.
Yeah, and especially when you have tendency to keel over.
Oh, that's what I'm getting at, you know. That's exactly what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I'm more suited to the type of weather that's normally here, meaning rain.
Yeah, rain. Tomorrow's forecast, more rain. But it is dog days, so be careful. There may be some blind snakes out there or something, according to Agnes.
Oh, the only kind of snakes we have are the nice little garter snakes, and they're harmless.
Well, they'll be blind right now because it's dog days. I mean, Agnes done told me, okay?
Although I used to live in Virginia, so I'm used to playing with wire moccasins, too.
Ew, I hate them. I just hate them. Susan, you take care, dear.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to stop and do some news for a minute. We'll be back. Jump on in if you... Oh, by the way, I screwed up. The week's guest commentary is up now at BillyShearsMusic.com, and that is our good friend Sue, otherwise known as ELO, otherwise known as... founding member of the Sioux crew. So I regret the error. So now it's news time. On the other side of the news, you want to get involved with the conversation? I certainly invite you to. I can look, I can fill a bobster.
Oh, God, no.
But, you know, you can get in on it too. 304-658-5912. 304-658-5912. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I say a little prayer, hoping I'll be heard. Lord, help the children to find peace in their time. I look all around me, it don't seem so wrong. I gotta find a way to make it all right.
This is the Quality News Network. Iraq warns all-out civil war could result if U.S. troops pull out of the country too early. The remarks came in response to a New York Times article suggesting the White House was considering a gradual drawdown of forces. Iraq's foreign minister told a news conference, quote, "We might see the country collapse." White House spokesman Tony Snow immediately denied the report of any debate on withdrawal. Meanwhile, pressure is increasing from fellow Republicans for a change of strategy in the war. At the same time, the U.S. Senate continues debating war funding. In Iraq, civilians are being urged to fight back following a weekend in which as many as 250 died in sectarian violence. At the last minute, U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has canceled his Latin American trip to prepare next week's Pentagon report on the president's Iraq surge strategy. The U.S. Army missed its monthly recruiting goal for a second month in a row in June. Pentagon officials say the Army fell short by about 1,000 new recruits. The State Department denies claims that Turkey is massing troops on its border with northern Iraq, but the Turkish foreign minister confirmed the country does have a plan at the ready to secure their borders against Kurdistan Workers Party rebels that continue attacking inside Turkey. President Bush refused requests by Congress for testimony from two former aides about the firings of federal prosecutors. The president invoked executive privilege in denying the testimony. Pakistan's president agreed to give clerics more time to negotiate an end to a week-long standoff between government forces and insurgents holed up in a capital city mosque. 300 have reportedly died in the siege so far. A landmark meeting will be held this week between Israeli diplomats and members of the 22-country Arab League. And in Vienna today, the UN's nuclear watchdog agency voted to send experts to help North Korea shut down its nuclear reactor. A London jury today convicted four men of conspiring to murder British citizens in a failed transport system bombing 2 years ago. The jury's not reached agreement on two other suspects in the case. The director of the National Hurricane Center has stepped down after nearly half his staff created a petition to oust him. Wildfires continue to scorch the western U.S. You're listening to the Quality News Network Science and Business next.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address and city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
NASA has postponed the launch of a space probe designed to study asteroids. The earliest the launch of the Dawn mission can now take place is September. A study of heart attack patients shows that the obese have a better chance of surviving a heart attack. Experts are puzzled by the findings, but warn the results of the study should not be used as an excuse for the overweight to indulge. The FDA approved a patch for Alzheimer's disease. The patch will deliver the same drug already available in pill form, but applied to the skin, it releases a continual supply throughout the day. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, antidepressants are the most commonly prescribed drugs in the U.S. In New York, a man caught videotaping a preview performance of the movie Transformers is the first to be arrested under the state's new anti-piracy laws. If convicted, he faces 6 months in jail and a $5,000 fine. Google will pay $625 million in cash to buy Postini. Postini is a specialist in communications security. Sony will cut the U.S. price of its PlayStation 3 games console by $100 in an attempt to increase sales. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $72.19 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 38 points. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Fourteen past, and we continue. I'm Bob. That's Agnes over there blowing kisses at me. She's a sweetheart, that Agnes. And, if you want to find out more, there's detailed explanations of what went on with that Sting concert over at BillyShearsMusic.com, including the audio of that performance of Fragile. And just go over there and avail yourself and hear it and listen to it and enjoy it. BillyShearsMusic.com. It's just that easy. Technical update. I tried to reach the repair shop up in the great state of Massachusetts where our phone processor is being worked on. Didn't get through today. We'll continue to do so tomorrow. And I say this because a question was put to me earlier. Have you just done away with the toll-free line altogether? No, we haven't. We haven't at all. And I don't know if I can make this technically cognizable, not because of you, but because of my poor abilities with such matters in the language. We got this gizmo, and this gizmo has six lines that come into it, and it takes an analog phone signal and turns it into digital so that we can do fun things with it, like put it over the air. This gizmo, you know, has a phone base unit with lines 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 in something that the phone company likes to call a hunt group. It starts with line 1, and if line 1's busy, it rolls to line 2, and rolls to line 3, and rolls to line 4. Well, there are it comes into the machine three lines at a time, lines 1 through 3, 4 through 6, 7 through 9, and 10 through 12. On the 12-line system, which we don't have. We've only got six. That being the case, what happens is if you can't get through, and the thing, the part of the unit that got fried was the card that handles lines 1 through 3. So in order for the toll-free number to ring in, it rings in on the first open line, which it senses to be lines 1, 2, and 3. Lines 1, 2, and 3 are unavailable, therefore it does not ring, the toll-free line, that is. So in order to continue taking phone calls, we had to go to line 4, which is the line that I've been giving out, 304-658-5912. 304-658-5912. That's how you get through if you want to talk. And frankly, it's a little easier on us from a financial standpoint. If you can bear to bring it in on your own nickel, that's the better for us. Because I think we pay something like almost 6 cents a minute for the toll-free stuff. But it hasn't gone forever. If you want to communicate with the program, and when we get the refurbished box back, well, then by golly, that'll be just fine by us. And we'll let you know. Believe me, I will let you know when that gets up and gets running. I want to share something with you real quick, because you know that we approached the idea of soliciting your funds very, very well, with a lot of trepidation, and the outpouring of support has been truly inspiring. But I got something today from a note from one of our listeners, whose name I will keep private because I don't have permission to put it out there with something like this. But this person said, "I just wanted to say that I don't view this as a donation. We're not helping someone who's unable to help themselves. Giving money to Katrina victims is a donation. You provide real value to us, and we are more than willing, and in fact are glad for the opportunity to pay for that value. You're not really asking for donations. You're merely giving those of us in the audience who find what you do really valuable the opportunity to pay what it's worth to them. People pay me for the value I provide them. You should be no different. What you do is really important. People who do important work should be able to earn a living. That proposition seems uncontroversial to me, and it is not charity. Rock on, brother." And signs off. That was incredibly moving to me. It absolutely was. Please, and you know, if you write and if you want to know and you ask, I will tell you, because I can, I'll make it clear what it is that we are soliciting support for. And that is the operational costs of what we're doing. And because those of you who have any kind of working knowledge of the internets knows what bandwidth costs. And we are, you know, we're not some text site. We're not just hanging up a bunch of text and getting visitors. It takes a little bit more to put a live stream out there 24/7. And then on Ben's end, not just that, but also the archives and the podcasting, again, for which we charge no fee. Leave it strictly up to you. If you can, please do. Please support. If you can't, please understand that we are grateful to know that we're a part of your life. And we thank you for sharing that time with us. So, I mean, that's where all of that stands. The button is there at headonradionetwork.com. I believe it's right under the link that says Site Admin over toward the right side of the website. And if you can support, we do appreciate it because it makes sure that we'll be... I mean, this isn't about us having raising money for our trip to the south of Spain. This isn't about us raising money for us. This is about raising money to pay the bills that keeps this going from month to month. And frankly, I'm pretty astonished by what we've been able to do with what we've had up through this point in time. It's astonishing. I don't think anybody else, I don't think there are a lot of people out there that would be willing to put forward this kind of effort. And that's not, no, don't start the John Philip Sousa music or anything. That's not what I mean. But I think we have been very, very good stewards of the resources that we have had available to us and the people who share their time both to do shows and to participate in shows and to listen to shows, our moderators in the chat room, our news ninjas, our bloggers. It's all just blows my tiny mind. It truly and genuinely does. Now, I mentioned the... I want to go... See, my attention deficit disorder is kicking in. I want to go back to the audio and show you where this stuff all goes, how it works, you know, how it all works out. You heard Neil Bortz, who is, of course, a rotten little liar that even his mother probably doesn't like. Now you get to hear it go the next step forward. And do you remember Dan Burton, the Indiana congressman? Now this is the guy who, during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, was notorious for taking a watermelon into his backyard. You remember this? This happened. I mean, I'm not making this up. This was fairly well reported, and he bragged about it in Congress. He claimed to have proven that Hillary Clinton murdered Vince Foster because he took a high-powered handgun out into his backyard and shot a watermelon with it. Really? I know it's a long time ago now and everything, and I know it sounds just crazier than something that somebody who, you know, huffed household fluids for a living would do. But that really was Dan Burton. Dan Burton, watermelon killer. Well, they hauled old Dan out. Rob Schuster was filling in for Chris Matthews over at Hardballs. And so they got Debbie Wasserman Schultz, congresswoman from Florida, and Dan Burton on the show. Now, this is a fairly long clip, but you'll enjoy it. Debbie, it's always fun to hear somebody just chew up one of these right-wing idiots and spit them out. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz does a lovely job of that. But even in the face of that, Dan Burton persists in trying to equate the commutation of the sentence of a man who was part and parcel of an ongoing criminal enterprise that resulted at least in part in the destruction of the career of Valerie Wilson. Tries to equate that with the guy who lied about whether or not he got a blowjob. I know. This does not compute. But let's listen in.
And welcome back to Hardball. Democratic Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida is a member of the Appropriations Committee, and Republican Congressman Dan Burton of Indiana is a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee and led congressional hearings on President Clinton's pardons and commutations. Congressman Burton, I want to start with you. You just heard Fuad Ajami compare Scooter Libby to our soldiers in Iraq, and we heard from Paul Reikaft, who actually served in Iraq, who said, no way. Do you consider Scooter Libby a soldier in the war in Iraq?
I'm not going to get into that argument that you just completed. What I'm going to say is this. Judgment and criticism is something I think is terrible. Bill Clinton...
I'm not going to answer the question you put to me there because you're going to make me look like the horse's ass that I am. That's what that was. That's one of those classic Nixon non-denial denials, isn't it? Okay, continue on, please, Agnes.
And welcome back to Hardball. Democratic Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida is a member of the Appropriations Committee, and Republican Congressman Dan Burton of Indiana is a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee and led congressional hearings on President Clinton's pardons and commutations. Congressman Burton, I want to start with you. You just heard Fuad Ajami compare Scooter Libby to our soldiers in Iraq, and we heard from Paul Reikaft, who actually served in Iraq, who said, no way. Do you consider Scooter Libby a soldier in the war in Iraq?
I'm not going to get into that argument that you just completed. What I'm going to say is this. Judgment and criticism is something I think is terrible. Bill Clinton pardoned terrorists. He pardoned people who broke the law. He himself committed perjury and was never disbarred. He had a temporary suspension, but that was it. He never went to jail. He committed perjury, told the American people lies.
Congressman Burton, let's get this straight. You supported Bill Clinton's...
Pause. He committed perjury. He told the American people lies. See, this is how they tried to do their thing before, and it's how they persist in trying to do it, these filthy right-wingers. He just equated perjury, which is a crime that is committed when one is under oath and testifying in court about a material fact. Please understand the significance of that, those two words, material fact. In other words, if I'm on the stand and I'm testifying about seeing some dude get shot. What's your name? I give my name. What's your address? I give my address. How old are you? I give my age. Arguably, those are all material, because they establish me as being the witness who claims to have seen what he saw. And did you see the victim get shot? Yes, I did. And who shot him? Is that person in the courtroom? Yes, he is. Could you identify for the record the person who is in the courtroom whom you saw shoot John Doe? And I say, it was him over there sitting next to the dirty defense lawyer. Okay? The defendant did it. All right? Those are all material. Now, the next thing the prosecutor asks me is, by the way, Do you like stewed prunes? And I say, love them. But in truth, I've told everybody that I can find on planet Earth that I hate stewed prunes. I loathe stewed prunes. I despise stewed prunes. I don't even like people who like stewed prunes. Obviously, I have lied. I have lied under oath. I have not, however, in many jurisdictions committed perjury because I have not lied about a material fact. Whether or not I like stewed prunes has not a damn thing to do with whether or not I saw the crime committed. Okay? Now, Bill Clinton looked into the camera and said, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. You know what? He got a blowjob. The fact of the matter is, that is not technically defined as sexual intercourse. Go read the statutes. President Clinton, do you like stewed prunes? I did not eat stewed prunes with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. Do you see the significance? Secondly, he was not under oath at the time he said it. Thirdly, at the time he was under oath and he said he did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky, it was not material to anything. It was not material to whether or not he had had sex with Paula Jones's nose. It was not material to whether or not he flew in rare forms of cocaine at MENA Airport and used the proceeds to buy some worthless land in a development called Whitewater. It wasn't material. On the other hand, when you bring Scooter Libby into the grand jury room and you say, do you know who leaked the name of Valerie Wilson to the press? I don't know that. I'm so damn dumb I can barely breathe. Nobody tells me nothing over there at the White House. That's material, because it's a lie about something that is germane to the investigation. Now, on the other hand, had they brought Scooter Libby in and said, do you know anything about the leak of Valerie Wilson's name to the press? And he said, I did not have sex with that woman, Mrs. Wilson. And in fact, he'd been banging her like a cheap Chinese gong. It wouldn't have been perjury! Because arguably, it's not material to the question at hand. Right-wing talkers count on the ignorance, and by ignorance I mean no insult. Right-wing blatherers count on the ignorance of the American people with regard to legal terminology. And so, therefore, they argue things like Bill Clinton committed perjury when he stood in front of the camera and said, I did not eat stewed prunes with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. It ain't perjury. Now, the mainstream media, not very good at getting under the hood and explaining all this to the American people. Because the American people, while ignorant of something, are not stupid about it. They are unlearned, but can learn. I am ignorant on the timing position of a 1967 Chevelle SS. I can learn that. And that's the distinction I'm trying. Okay, let's go listen to Debbie Wasserman Schultz chew on Dan Burton a little bit, if we can get there without me breaking in again.
impeachment for perjury and obstruction of justice, right?
Yes, yes, I did.
But now you support the commutation for Scooter Libby for perjury and obstruction of justice.
I think that Scooter Libby, being in the position that he was in, made a big mistake.
But you don't think he should spend a single day in jail for that mistake, even though you were willing to impeach a president who was elected twice?
Was Bill Clinton, did he serve any time? Did Bill Clinton get any penalty at all? Was he disbarred?
Yeah, history judged him pretty harshly, but the
Stop. Does somebody put Dan Burton's pants on for him in the morning? Because the man is obviously so damned ignorant. He's got. I'd be surprised if he didn't have an iPod with like the little earbuds. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. And if you took his little earbuds away, he'd just drop dead. He's that stupid. Bill Clinton didn't serve any time. Bill Clinton was convicted. No, he wasn't. But these people have been sent out there en masse with marching orders to go out and dummy up the process and muddy up the waters. This SOB is still carrying water for George Bush. He's still carrying water for the religious right. He is still crazier than a sprayed roach. And Dan Burton, the fact of the matter is, loves his political party more than he loves his country. And it is obvious.
Well, it's going to judge Scooter Libby as well. But, you know, don't be selective in your judgment. You know, I know you're a strong Democrat and a liberal.
Oh, wait. You're doing this because you're one of them dirty communist pinko faggot liberals. Yes, sir. That's what you are. You're liberal. God, I hate these people. Lord Jesus, Lord God, Billy Bob, I despise them. What's that old saying? If you grew up in the South, two things in this world I despise, a liar and a thief. And I despise the liar more than I do the thief.
You have seen my coverage of Bill Clinton during the pardon. I was covering your hearing, Congressman, for the fact of the matter is. But let's get back to this point. The point is that you believe that when it's perjury and obstruction of justice involving somebody who probably has information about the vice president, that information that's no longer going to get out, it's fine for him not to spend a single day in jail. But it's fine when a Democrat commits perjury and obstruction of justice for them to be impeached, right?
Did Bill Clinton go to jail? I don't remember that. Did Bill Clinton?
You tried to impeach him. You tried.
Well, but he was. But he was not convicted of the impeachment. He didn't go to jail. He was prosecuted. Going to be prosecuted for perjury and lose his license to practice law.
Wait. You hear him spraying? But he was prosecuted. These rabid right wingers are just about. I mean. You know, they're at that part where they start, you know, they're not quite to the part where they start staggering down the street, Atticus Finch. They're still walking straight.
Did Bill Clinton go to jail?
Well, and see, this is where Robert Schuster sort of drops the ball. Because that's where you look at this freak and you say, no freak, Bill Clinton didn't go to jail because Bill Clinton was never charged and indicted by a grand jury. He wasn't arraigned before a member of the federal judiciary. He wasn't subjected to a trial with a jury of his peers. He was not convicted and then sentenced. That's why Bill Clinton never went to jail. On the other hand, Scooter Libby went before a grand jury, lied like a rug, got indicted for it, got tried for it, got convicted for it, and got sentenced for it. That's why Scooter Libby should go to jail. You right-wing Republican thug, you jerk who has no regard whatsoever for the rule of law. That's the answer to that, Mr. Schuster.
And you never said a thing about that. And
actually, I did, as a matter of fact. I covered every one of your hearings when I was working in my former job. But let's go to Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You believe that President Clinton should not have been impeached. Is that correct?
Well, I was in the Florida House of Representatives when that impeachment was prosecuted. So, you know, at the time, no, I didn't think that President Clinton should be impeached. But I think the important thing to note that my colleague is conveniently leaving out is that President Clinton unlike Mr. Libby, was not convicted. He was prosecuted by the House. He was impeached. He was not convicted by the Senate. Unlike Mr. Libby, who was prosecuted and convicted by a jury of his peers, had a judge hand down the sentence, and then had the President of the United States swoop in and rescue him from that sentence, in contradiction to his own Department of Justice's advocacy just 2 weeks ago for a similar sentence of 33 months for the same crime that a government official was convicted of. Victor Rita was convicted of obstruction of justice and lying to prosecutors, and he got 33 months in jail. The Department of Justice supported vehemently that conviction and that sentence in front of the Supreme Court, and instead, the president, for Scooter Libby, a different standard for the same crime. There is apparently no amount of time in jail that's appropriate. This is an example of hypocrisy of immeasurable proportions. It's obvious that this administration has no shame at all. And they continue to demonstrate how they have no shame.
Now, wait a second, Agnes. Let's make something clear here. She talked about the sentencing of this other individual. It has also been claimed by right-wingers that the judge gave Scooter Libby more time than he legally could have. Pathetically shameless. Just pitiful. I believe the max on just one of the counts of Scooter Libby's conviction, the max on that was 5 years. Given Scooter Libby's presence and high position in the government, he should have gotten every single count upon which he was convicted the maximum sentence. And then the judge should have said, and I order that you will serve those sentences consecutively and not concurrently. That way, when the sentence for one ended, the sentence for the next one started and started and on and on and on, and the guy would have been out of jail in about 30 years. Just like the individual that Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz just mentioned. See, the fact of the matter is, Reggie B. Walton, like it or no, Reggie B. Walton, the honorable federal judge who tried Scooter Libby, is a Bush appointee. So in giving him those 28 months or 30 months or whatever, he was dealing with Scooter Libby in a de minimis fashion. He was giving him a light sentence. For how many felonies he got 30 months? When he could have gotten in excess of 5 years for just one of them? This is what makes this all so painful. Scooter Libby got special treatment from Judge Reggie B. Walton. He got the kid gloves. He got the deferential treatment that these people like. He got as little as the judge could get away with in public in terms of a sentence. And then to have George Bush stand up and say, well, I have been told that the sentence is excessive, but I'll let the jury verdict stand. Well, how damn noble of you, George, to let the jury verdict stand. To not supplant your will over that of the jury as well. But don't worry, America. That's coming too, because he will eventually be pardoned. I'm not going to let go of this issue. I don't think you should either. I think Scooter Libby should be the first word out of your mouth, maybe after the Iraq War, from now until November 2008 and beyond. Scooter Libby is the poster child for why Republicans have no business in governance. Onward.
My response is that Bill Clinton lied to a grand jury twice.
You desperately want to make this about Bill Clinton, and this is about President Bush and the fact that his administration has spent the last 6.5 years operating as if the law does not apply to them. And
Congressman Schultz, let him go with this whole idea about lying to the grand jury, because I'm intrigued with where he's going.
You know what, you're right.
Go ahead, Congressman Burton.
I'm going to sit back and let him cook his own goose.
Bill Clinton committed perjury twice. He was going to be indicted and he was going to be prosecuted, but because of his position,
woulda, shoulda, coulda.
And he spent $25,000. He had lost his license to practice law for
practice
about
medicine.
Six
Wait a
or
minute.
Seven.
You hear this idiot? He lost his license to practice medicine? Where was Dan Burton's brain? Up Karl Rove's rear end. I know. Well, actually, it is Karl Rove's rear end. But go on, Agnes.
To practice law for about 6 or 7 months, and then he got it all back. He didn't go to jail for perjury. He didn't go to jail for
lying. Congressman Burton, you would have preferred if President Clinton had been prosecuted. So here's the question. Uh-huh. How much time should somebody spend in jail if they are convicted of perjury and obstruction of justice? Should they spend 1 day? Should they spend 3 weeks? Should they spend 3 months?
I think the same rule of law should be applied to everybody, including President Bill Clinton, and it was not. And he also pardoned.
Really? Well, the Senate didn't convict him. So the same rule of law applied to him. It was a different situation that you are trying to compare to this situation. That's the only argument you've made for the last 2 or 3 minutes. It is not comparable. The President Clinton was not convicted by the Senate, and what would have happened to him if he was? He would have been removed from office.
That's
appealable
right.
to no one.
That's
appealable
right.
to no one. In yeah. this case, Scooter Libby was convicted.
But the perjury
and
was a different...
Who rescued him? The President of the United States.
The perjury
was both accused of perjury.
The perjury charge was entirely different from the impeachment, and you know that. He was charged with perjury for lying to a grand jury not once but twice.
See, he's lying.
The American
Stop.
People. He looked...
He's a liar. He's a Republican. He's a liar. Liar, Republican, Republican, liar. Liar, Republican, Republican, liar. You can say, you can use them interchangeably. Why, it's just like fourth grade when we were learning grammar. It's a synonym. Liar is synonymous with Republican and vice versa. He was charged with perjury. He was charged with perjury. He was charged with perjury. No, dumbass. We're talking about a criminal trial here. Bill Clinton was never criminally charged with anything, you filthy right-wing Republican, dumber than a bag of liar. I hate him. I just despise him. You know, I come by it honest. Starting with really old people in my young life who had seen what Republicans had done to them every time they thought that they had a handle on their little lower class lives. Every time that happened, some Republican president came along and screwed the pooch. And then tried to lie about it to cover it up. Let's continue on with this fool.
Right in the camera and says, I want to tell you something. And you, the American people know that. Now, let me just say one more thing, and then you can say what you want to. He pardoned terrorists, the Puerto Rican terrorists. He pardoned people who are drug dealers. He pardoned Mark Rich, who was the number two wanted by the FBI and who they tried to get for years. And he never even was allowed to go to trial. Clinton pardoned him. He tried to pardon other people that his brother and his wife was trying to get pardoned.
Burton, given that Mark Rich's attorney was Scooter Libby, I'm even more surprised that you would support a commutation of Scooter Libby. Furthermore, I think that there are going to be a lot
exactly.
of people sit in prison today in Florida and in central Indiana who also want pardon. And commutations, and we're going to be wondering, why not me? But in any case, Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Congressman Dan Burton.
Yeah, okay. So what do you take away from that? Well, we've got Neil Bortz so far, and we've got Dan Burton, and it has been spread, this lie has been spread all over the media in a desperate attempt to make things look somehow equivalent. They aren't. He pardoned terrorists! He pardoned terrorists! Now, only at the very end of that does Dan Burton... That Puerto Rican! That terrorist! Huh. Last I checked, the Bush administration gave a pass to a man who blew up an airliner in mid-air. You know what I'm talking about. I don't have the guy's name at hand. But he was a wanted man. He was an escapee from prison. I'm not mistaken, but I think he's still walking around free. Because the Bush administration Justice Department... Oh, there they are again! Quietly let the case go. 200 and some odd people this guy killed with blowing up an airliner? en route between Venezuela and Cuba, I believe it was, murdered 200-plus people, 100-plus people. With scales like that, what does it matter if it was 100 or 200? What does it matter if it was one? He's a murderer. The George Bush Justice Department let him walk. The only commutation or pardon that George Bush ever did in Texas, not Carla Faye Tucker, not a woman that the prison officials themselves said probably deserved to live because she was a light unto her fellow inmates. No. Henry Lee Lucas. Look him up. Madman, mass murderer, serial killer. Pardoned. Satanist.
Satan?
Yeah. Pardoned. Now, Mark Rich. A moment on Mark Rich, if you please. Over on the Ohio River on the West Virginia side, there's a little town called Ravenswood. And at one point in time, Ravenswood was a pretty prosperous place, and that prosperity spread out from Ravenswood over two and three counties. Because there was something there called RAC, the Ravenswood Aluminum Corporation. And a lot of people from the area made good livings working there. It was a union shop. Hard times hit, RAC was sold, and sold again. It was eventually sold and reconstituted by an investor group whose first goal was to destroy the organized labor bargaining unit that existed there under the aegis of, I think, both the United Steelworkers and the United Aluminum Workers of America. Illegally, corruptly, feloniously, dirtily, these people who had built careers building the profit structure for the ownership of that corporation were locked out. They were locked out of their jobs in an effort to bust the union. I knew men who had seen their careers, their lives go to hell because of what was done to them by the management at RAC. One of them went from having a very high-paying job doing significant work to running a little diner just to hold on. He was a decent man. He was a proud member of his union. And he was locked the hell out in direct contravention of the laws of the United States of America. Now, who was the man behind that lockout? The man behind that lockout was a man, a financier of Boku dollars, named Mark Rich. I will tell you that while a lot of people said, well, you know, pardons are the president's business, and, you know, they give pardons, blah, 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 blah. And while you know me well enough to know that I would not give the time of day to some godless, soulless, motherless, conscienceless right-winger, and know that, you know, the only way you can tell when a right-winger's lying is to look and see whether his mouth is open or not, and his lips are moving, I was ashamed and sickened when Mark Rich was pardoned. Now, bear in mind, the feds weren't after Mark Rich because of anything that he did ruining the lives of thousands of hard-working union members, hard-working West Virginians and Ohioans at Ravenswood Aluminum. No. No, he was being pursued by the feds because he didn't like to pay taxes. You got to understand, people were shot at the Iraq lockout. Agnes had family who worked there. People's families' lives were utterly destroyed because Mark Rich determined that he wasn't Mark Rich enough. And he was willing, therefore, to destroy anything that got in his way, including, you know, taking the money away from a family that would pay for a little girl's braces, or her dance and gymnastics class, or a kid's guitar lessons, or the food off their damn tables. Gasoline in their tanks. But that was all fine. And all of that money that he saved in screwing those union members, he refused to pay taxes on. And therefore, he got a pass from the Clinton administration. I think more of the goo that hangs out in my sinuses than to spit it on Mark Rich. Okay? So please, I know what the... Oh, there's some other host out there that has that uses the phrase InfoWars. And these really are wars of information. And I am afraid that somewhere in the mix of this whole Scooter Libby discussion, Scooter Libby, who defended Mark Rich, who secured for Mark Rich that pardon... I'm afraid that somewhere along the way, there might be, as we defend and compare and contrast this whole miserable situation, I am afraid that there might be some tendency to say, well, the Mark Rich pardon was different because Mark Rich hadn't done anything nearly as sleazy or awful as Scooter Libby. There's a reason that they were counsel and client together. Because birds of a feather flock together. And I mean to tell you that Mark Rich flocked the living daylights out of the people of Jackson County and Roane County, West Virginia, and Calhoun County, and Wirt County, and Mason County, and Wood County. I mean, he flocked them till they bled. And so, in the midst of all of this, don't be fooled into believing that there is that there was some compelling reason to cut Mark Rich a break. It was wrong. It was also the president's prerogative, and I acknowledge that. It was the president's prerogative to under the law and the Constitution to commute Scooter Libby's sentence as well. And ultimately, it will be presidential prerogative that allows him to pardon Scooter Libby. It does not make it any less dirty, any less filthy. Our good friend Ben Birch suggested to me that we need to amend the United States Constitution to say that the president may not exercise his pardon on behalf of anyone who has worked within his administration. I can see that. Pardons are acts of mercy. Pardons are rewards for contrition shown. They are not designed... They're not designed to shield the higher-ups from their own criminal culpability. That is something that was engendered by Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford, after all, pardoned a man who hadn't been charged with a crime yet. The perversion of the pardon started with the Republican Party and Gerald Ford. It's why there ought to be somebody up there peeing on that man's grave every day. Okay? But let's keep things squared away. I'm not going to compare the Mark Rich thing to the Scooter Libby thing because Mark Rich is an evil son of a bitch who should not have been pardoned. if for no more reason than what he did to my brother and sister West Virginians. But I acknowledge the prerogative. All right, we'll be back. You want in on this? Share your thoughts. 304-658-5912. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Salvation Army band played, and the children drank lemonade, and the morning lasted all day, all day. And through an open window came, like Sinatra in a younger day, pushing the town away.
This is the Quality News Network. The White House denies reports it's debating troop withdrawal from Iraq. That as pressure is increasing from fellow Republicans jumping ship over the president's present war strategy. At the same time, the U.S. Senate continues its debate over funding for the war. Iraqi leaders warn if U.S. troops leave too soon, the country could be tipped into all-out civil war. The remarks came in response to a New York Times article suggesting the White House was considering a gradual drawdown of forces. Iraq's foreign minister told a news conference, quote, "We might see the country collapse." After a weekend of sectarian violence in the country killed as many as 250, both Shiite and Sunni leaders urged civilians to arm themselves and fight back. Today, at least 13 were killed in Baghdad. At the last minute, U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has canceled his Latin American trip to prepare next week's Pentagon report on the president's Iraq surge strategy. The U.S. Army missed its monthly recruiting goal for the second month in a row. Pentagon officials say the Army fell short by about 1,000 new recruits for June. The State Department denies claims that Turkey is massing troops on its border with northern Iraq. But the Turkish Foreign Ministry confirmed the country does have a plan at the ready to secure their borders against Kurdish militants who have stepped up attacks inside Turkey recently. President Bush refused requests by Congress for testimony from two former aides about the firings of federal prosecutors. The president invoked executive privilege in denying the testimony. Pennsylvania's governor has temporarily laid off a third of the state's employees following a breakdown in budget negotiations in the legislature. A landmark meeting will be held this week between Israeli diplomats and members of the 22-country Arab League. And in Vienna today, the UN's nuclear watchdog agency voted to send experts to help North Korea shut down its nuclear reactor. A London jury today convicted four men of conspiring to murder British citizens in a failed transport system bombing 2 years ago. The director of the National Hurricane Center in the U.S. has stepped down after nearly half his staff created a petition to oust him. The status of Bill Proenza is not clear, but the center's deputy director has taken temporarily in charge. Wildfires continue to scorch the western U.S. We have science and business next.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful central coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
Scientists say a mixture of body fat and concentrated stem cells can now be used to grow or enhance breasts. Fat alone has been used in the past, but it tends to be reabsorbed by the body. The stem cells apparently encourage tissue to grow. If licensed, the treatment could help with reconstruction and augmentation. A study of heart attack patients shows that the obese have a better chance of surviving a heart attack. Experts warn the results of the study should not be used as an excuse for the overweight to indulge. The FDA approved a patch for Alzheimer's disease. The patch will deliver the same drug available in pill form, but it releases a continual supply throughout the day. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, antidepressants are the most commonly prescribed drugs in the U.S. In New York, a man caught videotaping a preview performance of the movie Transformers is the first to be arrested under the state's new anti-piracy laws. The Chicago Board of Trade has been given the green light by shareholders to merge with crosstown rival, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The deal is worth $11.9 billion. Light sweet crude is trading at $72.50 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 38 points at 13,649. The NASDAQ was up 4 and the S&P was up 1. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Are we in hour three already? I swear, I think sometimes that one of Kurt Vonnegut's chronosynclastic infundibula takes over this program, because I don't know where the first two went. Is it under the workstation? No. They're gone. So a chance for you to get involved for the next 50 minutes or so, 304-658-5912. Oh, you did play the wrong intro, did you? Don't mess with my tiny mind, Agnes.
Sorry.
It can't stand the strain.
Oh, neither can mine.
304-658-5912. When in doubt, give the damn phone number. Email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com, bob@headonradio.com, and I welcome your comments. I try to respond. If I don't respond to them on the air, I'll try to respond to them off the air. One way or the other, we're going to communicate, dadgummit. Luke joins us from the far reaches of Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, how are you, brother?
Is this the third hour? I thought this was the 31st hour. Damn. Oh, God. Damn time loop will get you every time.
I know. I'm feeling... yeah, I know.
Well, I had to cut off the call a little bit earlier, and I didn't know if you got to it. Did you mention the other fact about Mr. I've taken a watermelon out in the backyard and shot it 3 or 4 times? Did you mention who he hired as his chief investigator?
No, I can't wait.
You remember who a fellow named David Bossy?
Oh, no kidding, yeah.
You know, so it's like, but like you say, it's interesting to watch this. I mean, it's like the whole thing with leaking Valerie Plame's name. It's like, well, gee, Richard Armitage did it, but who the hell told Richard Armitage? You know, no one ever seems to want to ask that question.
He's clairvoyant.
That's what I mean.
Ouija board.
Do you remember the Psychic Friends Club one?
Yeah, it was a Ouija board.
I mean, isn't it amazing how all these people were mentioning her name all at the same time? You know, we find out that, you know, Colin Powell had this report on Air Force One. We find out that, oh, by the way, Scooter's talking to people. Carl Rove's talking to people. You know what I mean? And all these different people are all out there mentioning her name.
Well, I tell you, if we were really a top-flight, high-falutin radio operation, Luke, we'd be queuing up Harry Nilsson's Everybody's Talking at Me right now.
But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like this thing now where you're talking about with them saying, well, Clinton was guilty of perjury. It's like, say, if you just turned down the dial, you could hear every one of them saying the same thing. It's like... No.
And again, this is what makes people like Think Progress and Media Matters so very, very important. And frankly, for liberal talk organizations to work in concert with them.
With
because,
like Crooks and Liars, you know, who run the original stuff and say, here's what was said. So now they can lie, but here you play them saying no.
Yeah, bust them.
Yeah.
Because... the fact that, and what I'm trying to get across, Luke, with all of this, is that this is, another one of my favorite movie lines. This is not a boating accident. This is a coordinated effort. Somebody in some little think tank somewhere has come up with this talking point, and they've refined it and nuanced it and finessed it and made a million phone calls to find out who the flacks are who are willing to go out and carry water for this lie.
Well, you know what that is, don't you? Well, don't they still, as far as we know, they still have that weekly meeting of Mr. Norquist Group.
Yep, exactly.
You know, where, amazingly enough, all these movers and shakers are in this meeting, and right after they come out, they all go out and say the exact same thing. I mean, it's parrot class. Come on. Polly Wonder Cracker, come on. You know, but...
I hear the parrot in the background. Well, yeah, but the truth of the matter is, that's the kind of war that we're waging right now. Now, the Clintons, Senator Clinton, Bill Clinton, they were very good in their presidential campaigns at not tolerating that stuff. The minute one of those came back, they'd get up and get in your face, and take them out at the knees. I wish the rest of the Democratic media world could figure out how well that works. I hate it that we have to play those kind of sleazy games, Luke. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, we need our own weekly meeting.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of those things. You know, I mean, I don't know if maybe that's what Media Matters ought to do. You know, it's just like have a daily briefing. Here's what.
They're trying to. I get a wonderful thing from Media Matters every day called the Conservative Misinformation Alert.
But, you know, I mean, that's what it is. It's almost getting to that point. Where that's what you about have to have is every day you have to have them or Think Progress. You know, I mean, we're all on a different email list. You know that you have to get the list to see what everybody's saying, like get the truth out. You know, and you see all these stories and go, huh?
Yeah.
Because I mean, we can't cover all of them all the time. I wish we had enough time to do it, but.
Well, and that's what you hope these organizations will become as as different sources out there develop their own information and their own. I hate to say it, their own takes on this stuff. Some ideas are better than others. Someday the way Truth Out puts it will be better than the day Common Dreams puts it. On some days, the way that God knows, Bart Cop puts it will be better than 99% of anybody else out there.
Well, you know, it's like reading Huffington Post. You know, I enjoy reading Huffington Post. I don't agree with everything on it, but I read through it just to see what different people say. Because somebody's going to hit that nugget of truth here and there.
Yeah.
May not be the same person every day, but, you know, I mean, everybody develops who they want to follow along, and they'll find the right person, you know, that they listen to. But how did you enjoy the link?
Oh,
That was in our newspaper, which absolutely surprised the fool out of me.
Oh, but, you know, the one, Fred shouldn't be able to hide in Tennessee.
Well, that's the thing, you know, it's one of these things, it's like, say, why wasn't this, you know, why wasn't this, I've been, you know, I know they've been doing other stories here and there, but why wasn't that the lead story on two or three of the news shows today? I mean, you know, that should have been, you know, from the weekend. Here's something we found out that, oh, by the way, we can even play that would be fun.
Well, you know, I mean, the Associated Press did the research. They're the ones that went to the National Archives and listened to the tapes. And I love this. Now, this is journalism.
I'd really love to hear it played. I'd really love to listen to it. Oh.
Nixon to Bob Haldeman. Now, you can't print this word in the newspapers or anything, but we can say it because it's journalism here. Nixon to Bob Haldeman. Oh, shit, that kid. And then Haldeman says, well, we're stuck with him, sir. Boy, there's an endorsement for presidential hopefuls. That kid.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I say, he was an assistant attorney general.
For the Middle District of Tennessee, right there in Nashville.
And Howard Baker plucked him. Probably got thorns from that. But
yeah, you said plucked, yes.
Yeah, pluck, pluck, and put him on, you know, on the Watergate investigative staff.
Right.
And it's like I say, that was just putting a pipeline right into the Oval Office.
Well, I love the lines, and I read the article from the Knoxville paper, and then I went over to Pensito Review, where this is done in some detail too. Basically, the Haldeman and Nixon were scared that Thompson would be outgunned by John Dean, who was a much better lawyer than Thompson ever could dream of being.
Well, you know, it's like I've always said about Nixon. It wasn't just the fact that he was a crook. It's the fact he was a stupid crook. It's like, why did the first time anybody mentioned the word tapes, didn't he fire up the barbecue and start tossing them on?
Yeah, right. Now, I love this. I love this exchange. Nixon expressed concern that Thompson was not, quote,
up to it,
very smart.
Oh.
And J. Fred Buzzard, his lawyer, responded, not extremely so. Nixon says, but he's friendly. And Buzzard agrees on the tape. He says, but he's friendly. We're hoping, though, to work with Thompson and prepare him if Dean does appear next week to do a very thorough cross-examination. Then 5 days later, Buzzard comes back to Nixon, Luke, and he says, I found Thompson most cooperative, feeling more Republican every day. So, in other words, to feel more Republican is to feel more willing to participate in an obstruction of justice.
Because that's what it was. I mean, he's sitting there essentially ratting out the investigation. Here's what they're going to talk about tomorrow.
Yeah, like our good friend Susan said earlier, Fred Thompson, snitch.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what it is. He's essentially sitting there giving him a play-by-play of what the plan is. It's like he might as well have just been wearing a wire when he went into the meeting.
Well, yeah, when I read that phrase, he's feeling more Republican every day, Luke,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't help, my brain just immediately flashed on that phrase that we've recently learned, loyal Bushy.
Ah.
Isn't that the same thing? He's feeling more Republican every day. He's a loyal Bushy. That means you're willing to lie.
Mm-hmm. Make up any story to make us sound right.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like I say, what they call the big con, you know, they say, you keep saying something long enough, and everybody starts to believe it's the truth.
Yeah, the big lie, straight out of the Hitler playbook.
Just keep saying it over and over again, and when somebody says it's not right, you say, look at that man, he's insane. But, you know, it's just amazing sitting here watching. Well, one slightly good thing on the media right now, if you can actually say it's a good thing, excuse me, I shouldn't use those terms.
Okay, well.
Well, at least one nice thing, at least we've got Abrams now back on MSNBC instead of, since they apparently kicked Joe up to the morning show.
If that can be called a good thing.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's an improvement, but not much.
Well, what was it? What was this thing with, I mean, you're a watcher and stuff, Luke. What was this thing where Rob Schuster was on for Chris Matthews for that?
Well, you know, Schuster, at least one thing, Schuster is a journalist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and like I say, the first night he was on, I don't know what, I guess Chris is having his recurring illness again, you know what I mean? Or whatever it is. I don't know where Chris is sometimes. But sometimes you wonder if they're up there adjusting his medication, because sometimes he's just downright manic.
Well, speaking of which, did you see the on-site interview between Chris Matthews and Bruce Willis?
Oh, yeah.
Did that just make you cringe? I
turned it off because I was afraid what he was going to do.
I got an email from somebody saying this is why television should be outlawed.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's this thing now. You know, we talked about this before. You know, Chris Matthews is trying to rewrite his own history. You know, when all this stuff's coming down and Bush is looking worse and worse, every time you hear him talk, it's like, oh, I was against him all the way. You know what I mean? It's like every time you hear him talk, it's like he's wanting to say that he never trusted George Bush. This man was wearing pom-poms for the man. You know, he was out there doing the cheers for him.
In this particular instance, you know, Chris Matthews goes on site to interview Bruce Willis, who has shown up at the Smithsonian Institution to donate some of the set props from the Die Hard movie. I didn't know this was Smithsonian material, but you know, I guess.
Well.
I couldn't tell who was on more drugs. Bruce was obviously whacked out of his mind. I don't know if Chris was just morphing into dragons and snakes and stuff like that because of all the.
You feel like Bruce Willis was having a moonlighting flashback. You know. About the way he sounded, the way he was on Moonlighting.
Yeah, you know, that flat affect sort of, well, you know, I think we should support the troops. I was so dumbfounded by the audio, I don't think I recorded it.
I got watching that for about 3 or 4 minutes and just went, thank you, let's change the channel. I said, this is beyond strange. This is getting into the scary part. And
exactly.
I was like, I just said, no more of this. But, no, it's like I say, sometimes with Matthews, you really do wonder if somebody has adjusted his medication recently.
I don't.
Sometimes he's just downright manic.
Well, I just don't. I don't know why he's got a job.
Well, it's like I say, he's such a.
I would not tune in to watch this guy on the Sunday morning show where the guy played the old organ, you know, back in the days of locally produced television. Every
local channel had that.
Yeah.
Something like it.
And the magic organ, you know, he's not good.
It's one of those things. It's like, well, we had a half hour. We didn't have this is before, before everybody understands, before we had infomercials. We had to fill a half hour with something. You know, come on here and play the music. We don't care if you're good or not. We just need a half hour filler. It beats the color bars. Come on.
Exactly.
You know how it is around here. We used to have
yeah, and the test pattern with the Indian chief at the 12 o'clock position. Yeah, I know that guy.
In fact, there were some shows that were beaten by that. You know how that goes. but you know, it's one of these things nowadays. It's occasionally, and as I say, you wonder. You know, of course, we'll have to move Mr. Schuster. He was actually making some points. Got to get him out of there. Get him out of there. You know how that goes. It's sort of like watching a George Romero movie. You're sitting there going, look, he looks human, but he's a zombie, isn't he? Yes. It's like watching David Gregory. Every once in a while, he sounds human for just a minute or two. Then he opens his mouth again and, well, kill that illusion.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but I'm going to let you go on. I know you got other people to talk to.
All right.
Y'all have a good evening.
We'll talk to you soon, Luke. Hang in there, brother. Later. Oh, by the way, before I've got one more clip in the ongoing scooter coverage, so therefore we will conflate it to scooterage. But I want to mention something to you. Got this article from the New York Times sent to me by Lee. Headline, Mysteries Legal and Sartorial at the Padilla Trial. You remember Jose Padilla. They tried really hard to make us forget him. They were just going to stick him in a brig somewhere and let him die. No habeas, no nothing, because he's an American citizen and all that. Well, they're trying him. The trial's underway. It's in Miami, the same place where they tried Pineapple Face. Come on, Panama. Noriega. Dude really did look like a pineapple. I mean, come on. 9 weeks into his federal terrorism trial. Huh? Must have missed that coverage. That wall-to-wall coverage. Jose Padilla remains almost as mysterious as when he was hidden away in a naval brig for 3 years and 8 months. He looks relaxed most days, only seldom betraying tension when his jaw muscles twitch or his shoulders hunch in his business suit. He laughs softly when his lawyers joke, and he smiles at his mother when she comes to court on Fridays. He seems to follow the tortuous proceedings closely, but what he is thinking is anyone's guess. Remember, this is all set up to make you think that he's okay. Isn't this the same guy that his counsel claimed was a shattered and broken man? Isn't this the guy that they shackled, manacled, handcuffed, hog-tied, bound, gagged, and put a hood on to take him to the dentist? Isn't this that guy? I'm sorry. Let me put it a little bit differently. Isn't this that American citizen? The article goes on to state that he was initially charged with plotting to detonate a radioactive dirty bomb in the United States. And you remember when John Ashcroft chased all the calico cats out of the building and put the drape on the naked Statue of Justice and came out to tell us all breathlessly how the scary dirty bomb plot had been averted. Thank Jesus. Only problem was there wasn't a dirty bomb plot. There wasn't a dirty bomb. There wasn't even any dirty. Mr. Padilla, an American convert to Islam, was initially charged with plotting to detonate a radioactive dirty bomb in the United States and placed in military custody, even though he was an American citizen. But the government changed his status from enemy combatant to criminal defendant in the face of legal challenges. In other words, they lost. And he now stands accused of attending a terrorist training camp run by Al-Qaeda. That's right, you heard it here. He is accused of attending a terrorist training camp run by Al-Qaeda, from dirty bomb plotter to camper. Really. Prosecutors, the article says, have tried to prove Mr. Padilla's guilt with a training camp application. Application? Yeah, they got application. Do you have a peanut allergy? That they say he filled out in wiretapped phone conversations in which he took part or was discussed. Dude is on trial for what other people said about him, not in his presence. You got that? Welcome to the Dickministration Justice Department. The prosecution, the article from the New York Times notes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs in. They got that buried lead thing going on for them. The prosecution has no witnesses who saw Mr. Padilla fill out the form. The prosecution has phone recordings that make him sound more troubled than malign. The recordings suggest that Mr. Padilla, whose life to that point in time had been as a former gang member in Chicago and a fast food worker in South Florida, struggled to fit in and learn Arabic in Egypt, where he moved in 1998. In 1999, one of Mr. Padilla's associates said to another associate, you know, because, you know, when you're a terrorist, you have associates, just like at Walmart. Basically, he is a slow learner. Basically, he doesn't want to speak. I mean, the man doesn't move. This is the heart and soul of the government's prosecution of Jose Padilla. He speaks on several of the wiretapped calls, mostly monosyllabically. And, you know, that means he's saying, yes, no, maybe, no, yes. Now, meanwhile, the writer of this article, one Abby Goodenough, really, no kidding, Abby Goodenough, G-O-O-D-N-O-U-G-H, Abby Goodenough, I'm sure she pronounces it good now. Ah, you must be Igor. No, it's Igor. The question Abby asks is, what in the hell are the jurors thinking? Because she writes, get this, several times now, the 5 women and 7 men of the jury have shown up in color-coordinated outfits. One day, the men dressed in blue and the women in pink. On July 3rd, the first row wore red, the second white, and the third blue, leading bloggers to wonder whether they were worrisomely frivolous or unified, or so patriotic as to condemn all accused terrorists. That is almost as disturbing as the commutation of the sentence of Scooter Libby. I'm gonna start following this trial now. And I expect to see reportage from Amy Goodenough in coming days. Abby, yeah, just like normal. Abby Normal. Abby Goodenough. I expect to see coverage from her indicating that they're sitting in their box the idly playing rock, paper, scissors with one another. Or hitting each other on the side of the arm and playing flinch. They are color coordinating their days. Oh, God, they're going to come in as Klingons someday, aren't they? This is insane. 9 weeks this trial has been going on. 9 weeks this trial has been costing the American people to try a man who is innocent of everything except being an idiot. They caught him, they bagged him, they tagged him, and they stuck him in a naval brig. Oh, geez, just a brig. It makes it sound, you know, maybe it's a few cinder block. What? No, it's a prison complex in Charleston, South Carolina. A giant naval prison. sort of like Leavenworth, only for sailors. And they hoped to just forget him, until a couple of heroic lawyers stepped up and challenged his imprisonment. And they were compelled to bring him into the civil courts, criminal division of the federal judiciary. And therein, they were compelled to indict him. And that indictment charges him with going to Al-Qaeda summer camp. Hello, Mata. Hello, Fada. Here I am at Camp Al-Qaeda. When clearly he doesn't have the faculties of so much as a Richard Reed the shoe bomber. And you know what a goofy doofus he was. These are the people that the Bush administration, or the Dick administration, whichever you want to call it, want you to lay awake nights in cold sweats about. They want you wondering if the dude serving you your extra large portion of fries at McFaddy's might be, could be, a terrorist. Are you willing to participate in that? Are you willing to readjust your views of humanity to wonder if every poor schlub you come across who happens to have dark skin might be plotting the overthrow of the United States government, or a dirty bomb, or nuclear, or we're all going to be X-rayed? That's what they want of you as your patriotic duty in America. Tensions erupt, Abby Goodenough says. Tensions erupt so often that some days it seems the jurors are filing out to their break room every few minutes. The lawyers have fought over whether the government could use the term violent jihad. No. Whether it could show jurors a CNN interview with Osama bin Laden. Yes. Why? And whether the cross-examination of a witness could last longer than direct questioning. The lawyers complain of insufficient warning about exhibits and accuse each other of prejudicing the jury. Because, you see, part and parcel of all this is that the Dick administration Justice Department doesn't want to follow the rules that say that the defense is entitled to know what evidence is going to be used against their client. It's called disclosure. You know disclose, you know use. But they go, oh, Your Honor, we can't disclose this. It's it's a matter of national security, Your Honor. National security. You know, Your Honor. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. National security. And what is this that you don't want them to know? We believe the accused has an old sweat sock from Osama bin Laden. National security. Well, if he's got a sweat sock from Osama bin Laden, why? Well, I mean, we're going to use it at trial, Your Honor, but we can't let them know in advance, because then they'll want to have, like, forensic testing on the sweat sock to see if it really is Osama bin Laden's DNA or just some dirty damn thing we found in the locker at the Justice Department gym. National security, Your Honor. National security. Okay, national security. You can bring in the sock, but we can't have it tested. Your Honor, this is insanity, John Shipley, an assistant attorney general, said last week, complaining about a late-night email message he received from one of Mr. Hassoun, who is a co-defendant, one of his lawyers. Defense lawyers have asked repeatedly for a mistrial, most recently when jurors glimpsed Mr. Hassoun in shackles while leaving court. This week they were angered when the government's expert witness on terrorism refused to answer their questions on confidentiality grounds. See, what did I tell you? And when, one morning before his testimony, he appeared on CNN to discuss the attempted attacks in London and Glasgow. Judge Cook usually listens patiently while the jurors do who knows what, coordinate their outfits perhaps, in the break room. But last week she blew up at Jean Baker, a lawyer for Mr. Hassoun, calling her disrespectful after Ms. Baker talked over a government objection. "Tell the jurors to take 10 minutes, Judge Cook said, adding, "I'm taking 10 minutes. And she adjourned court early that day. There are still weeks to go. Weeks to go to prove that a guy filled out a form applying for Al-Qaeda camp because he couldn't get into music camp at Tanglewood in the Berkshires. Okay, I added that part. What a miscarriage of justice. What a circus. It's going to take 15, 16, 18, 20 weeks to try this guy who's not even worth trying, who couldn't learn Arabic, who had trouble working the fryo later at the burger thing. This is the desperation of the Bush administration. They can't just walk away from it. They were more than happy to let him spend the rest of his natural-born life in a prison until his mind was reduced to a settled, puddling pool of goo, and at which point maybe they would have just let him walk the streets until he was murdered, mugged, killed, stoned by some right-wing kiddies who wanted to beat up the homeless dude. It is, after all, South Florida. But they got caught, so now they have to try him, and they still can't just nolly the case. They can't just move nolo prosequi and walk away, because you see, they hung their hopes and ambitions for a terrorized America on Jose Padilla, former gang member. You know, when you get thrown out of a gang, not a lot to recommend you. Former gang member, former burger maker, former present, not real sharp guy, and alleged criminal terrorist mastermind. I mean, one of my favorite movies is The Usual Suspects. And I often secretly suspect that my wife Agnes is Kaiser Zosé. No, that's that line, you know. I believe in God, but I fear Kaiser Zosé. Emil Gint, the Kevin Spacey character. I guess is as close to Jose Padilla as you could get. But the thing is, Jose Padilla is no Emil Gint. Emil Gint, whatever. Jose Padilla is what he appears to be. A schmuck. A schlub. A guy who was allegedly heard once upon a time saying that... Who knows what he was heard saying? This guy's going to talk about dirty bombs? But again, the Bush administration can't let go of this. Because letting go would be a public letting go, and then everything would fall away and we would realize what a bunch of dumbass frauds they are. This was going to be a highlight case. This was going to be something to be proud of. This was going to be the government stopping the dirty bombing of America. But instead, the Bush Administration Justice Department, doing what the Bush Administration Justice Department does best, that is, lying, botched it. And now the guy's brains are mostly goo. He doesn't understand what's going on. Atticus Finch had a better client. In the Robinson matter. This is just pathetic. Pitiable. Sad. A complete evisceration of everything that the framers of the Constitution had in mind when they wrote up all the Bill of Rights amendments about the right to confront one's accusers. A travesty of justice in completely platonic archetypal terms. Scooter Libby, the Padilla case, and a couple of others are the examples of what the idea of justice has become under the Bush administration. A joke, a thing, a toy, a creature, a means to an end, and not one of the noblest urges of humankind. Something that makes the idea of justice that takes entire cultures, best thinkers, and has them spending hour after hour, day after day, week after week, year after year, contemplating the meaning, the very meaning of the word justice. Nope. It's a thing. At best, with the Bush administration, justice is a hammer. At worst, it is a joke. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, and maybe finish out the last of this evening's audio. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, a place where justice is still a remembered thing. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Scanning that dial, because he's right here on the horn, and when he comes, it will be music to your ears. I better go get ready. He'll be here real soon.
You are the faith in my heart. You light my way in the dark. You are the ultimate star. You pick me up from afar. Your unconditional love. To paradise. I belong to you, and you belong to me too. You make my life complete.
Brought to you by the Republican National Committee, George W. Bush, Maximum Decider.
Next time you see a stranger on a plane, a stranger with those swarthy looks we all know, ask yourself, shouldn't I be afraid? Maybe he wants to kill me. Maybe he hates us for our freedom. Fear, it's what's for dinner.
I can't see. Yeah.
And again, I was talking about the Republican debates. And we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out onto the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. Because that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, Joe Vecchio, the working man's thinking man. Moving to 11 a.m. to noon, June 18th, right here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Hello.
Hey, Al.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Gore.
Hello.
Hey, Al. This is the Vice President.
Mr. Gore, we need you for president.
We deserve a president we can respect.
We deserve a president we can respect. Who has experience.
And compassion.
Who is the most qualified.
Who is a proven leader.
Al Gore. Right on Iraq. Right on global warming. Right for the 21st century.
Join us at DraftGore.com in supporting Al Gore for the Democratic nomination for president.
Sign the petition at DraftGore.com.
Paid for by the committee to draft Gore. He won once. He can win again.
No, Agnes, in the promo, he says rub, not pinch. Too bad. 13 minutes before the hour as we move toward the end of tonight's program. Stick around. Great guest coming this evening on Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold. I think you'll enjoy the conversation, as usual, as Peter opens up the day planner. Not just the agenda, the homosexual day planner. And gives you all the inside secrets. By the way, if you haven't... I'm just sitting here looking at the chat room. If you haven't been by, go on by. Head on RadioNetwork.com, and you can click chat room and just jump right in there. Right now, it's Dancing Bananas. I'm Dancing Bart Simpson. You guys just crack me up. Dancing Bananas. Agnes is giggling. Let's finish off tonight's audio. I want to actually not be ADD tonight, and I want to go from point A all the way to point C. And I want you to hear the final upshot of the right-wing talking points about Scooter Libby. Again, this is NBC, MSNBC, something BC. And it is, I don't know where they found this woman, somewhere in Boston, I think, drinking screw top wine with the boys under the bridge. Her name is Shelley Cohen, and she purports to actually be a columnist. She was on with Dan Frumkin and somebody else, but she is the one who was brought on in the name of balance, I suppose, to give the right-wing analysis of the Scooter Libby case. Agnes, fire it up.
Shelley Cohen, Smart Politics, okay. To go forward.
Well, you know
yours.
What? I love you guys, but you are so creatures of the Beltway. Nobody outside the Beltway cares. People have been more concerned about slathering on the number 15 this week than they were about a pardon for Scooter Libby.
Stop. Take it back to the beginning, please.
Shelley Cohen, Smart Politics, okay. To go forward.
Well, you
with
know
yours.
What? I love you guys, but you are so creatures of the Beltway. Nobody outside the Beltway cares.
All right. There's only a couple of ways to analyze this. Nobody outside the Beltway cares about Scooter Libby. Either you, in Shelley Cohen's world are nobody, or you are not outside the Beltway. I'm way the heck away from the Beltway, and I care a lot about Scooter Libby because I have to make this make sense to my kids who are old enough to be paying attention. I used to laugh at the right-wingers when they said, well, how are we going to explain what Monica did to Bill to the children? They're going to be running around having sex. I am much more concerned that my children will look at the Scooter Libby case and be running around lying to grand juries. I'm trying to make certain that that doesn't happen, because one of the things I am explaining to my children is that this happened to Scooter Libby because Scooter Libby has a lot of money and even more power. And because Scooter Libby knows things about his superiors that his superiors do not want us to know. And that if, should they ever lie to a grand jury, they cannot expect this same thing to happen to them. But do you, I mean, have I wasted a Monday night program? Am I beating this to death? Is this on a par with Anna Nicole Smith and Britney Spears and the Paris Hilton, Whitney Houston, what the hell ever? Is this the same thing? Because you know what? I feel like somebody ought to be standing on a mountaintop with a 500,000 watt the transmitter screaming about the Scooter Libby case. Until Republicans are afraid to show their face in public for fear of being hit with rotten vegetables. Dirty, seditious, underhanded, rotten, stinking Republicans. Who believe that justice is a toy. A thing, like I said. Do you care about the Scooter Libby case? Because the talking point from the Republican National Committee is to tell you that you are not Jack if you do. You are nobody if you care about the Scooter Libby case. Go on, Agnes.
People have been more concerned about slathering on the number 15 this week than they were about a pardon for Scooter Libby. And to the extent that no one outside the Beltway really cares what happens to Scooter Libby, then the Republicans have won this round.
Have they? Have they? Are you willing to let the Republicans win? This round, wait. To look at this as winning and losing, there is one loser in this. I mean, this isn't some football game. Oh, the clock ticked down, the Republicans won. It was 7-3, and they couldn't. No. There is one loser in this. The Constitution is a loser in this. Justice in this nation of laws and not of men is a loser in this. You are a loser in this. Are you really, I mean, shall we just give up and go home? Is America more concerned with slathering on the 15 than they are with whether or not Scooter Libby actively participated in outing a CIA agent and committing treason against the United States of America? Is that really the measure by which we judge this country now? Is sunblock more important than the fundamental principles of justice upon which this nation were founded? Was founded? You tell me. Tell me tomorrow. There'll be plenty of time. Well, not tomorrow. I won't be here tomorrow. The rest of the network will be on tomorrow. I won't be here tomorrow. Tell me Wednesday. Tell me on prayer meeting. Tell me if sunblock is more important than the perversion of justice in the United States of America. And the Republicans have won this one. Well, I guess they did win because they got away with it. Will they continue to get away with it? or will you put pressure on your elected representatives to quit sitting around with their thumbs up their butts and do something? It is entirely up to us. If they don't do something, then we can do something about them at the ballot box in 2008. If they don't do something, then that means running in, finding people to run in primaries against Democrats. Because they know what we'll do in November when faced with the lesser of two evils. It's up to us. You can try to apply pressure. It's all you can do. And you can tell them what you will do with your vote should they not do something about the perversion of justice in this country. And that is the most that we can possibly expect of one another. That's it for tonight. Thanks, everybody, for sharing your time with me, with us. Thank you, Agnes, for producing. Thank you, John Fox, our chief engineer in Sydney, Australia. Peter Godbold, he of Strictly Confidential, is also still our IT consultant and one of the best in the business. Many thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who helped us get this network started and thereby are helping us to save the American dream while they build the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. 140,000 Turkish troops have amassed on the northern border of Iraq in preparation to battle the Kurds that have been taunting them for months. Iraq's foreign minister, himself a Kurd, is trying to get the two foes to come to the negotiating table instead of battling each other. He stressed that the Iraqi army is already stretched thin enough fighting insurgents in the streets of Baghdad. In Iraq, Sunni and Shiite leaders are calling on civilians to arm themselves and fight back in Baghdad. This weekend, 250 people died in sectarian violence. Also this weekend, three U.S. and one British soldier were killed. Iraq's foreign minister warned today that a quick American exit would lead to civil war and the collapse of the government. The U.S. Senate resumed its debate today over Iraq war funding. Four men have now been convicted for a conspiracy to commit murder in the failed July 2005 attempts to blow up three tube trains and a bus in London. The fate of the two other members of the cell resumes tomorrow. All six men have been on trial since February. The failed attempts came just 2 weeks after 52 people were killed in the bombings of a double-decker bus and a tube train in July of 2005. The head of Interpol is criticizing Britain for not sharing information on terrorism suspects or their motives, tactics, and plans. Authorities are digging through evidence on three continents to formulate a solid case against the suspects arrested in the recent failed car bombings in London and Scotland. Eight people are now in custody, and evidence from Australia, England, and India is being analyzed. Morocco's security threat level has been raised to maximum as its government readies for an imminent terrorist attack. Five suicide bombers and a policeman died in an attack there in March. Late word out of Pakistan is that an inside deal is being worked to grant safe passage for the Al-Qaeda militants holding Islamabad's Red Mosque under siege. The Pakistani army has cut off the mosque's electricity.